Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Thursday, November 15th, 2007. The only November 15th, 2007 in the history of humanity. Let us continue to make it a great one. Thank you for including us in on this particular November 15th. And whether you're listening to us live or via the archives, we are very happy to welcome you in to the world known as Glenn Klein Online. And it is a historic night in many ways. First of all, it's my daughter Hannah's 17th birthday today. Yes, 17 years ago, Hannah Klein came out, and her name is Hannah Joy Klein, and what a joy she is. So she's been having a very special day, and we've been enjoying it. Our daughter Gracie, who's 11, who, as many of you beautiful humans know, is our only child that's adopted. We have the six children. She's number six, and she's a special one as our adopted one. But for our birthday tradition at our family, we do presents first thing in the morning, and Gracie had all these different coupons that she had made for Hannah, and coupons for things like get out of my room and leave me alone. And Gracie even had a coupon for a coupon. So that's our 11-year-old Gracie's sense of humor celebrating Hannah Joy's 17th birthday. So I doubt she's listening right now because I think she's out partying with her friends. But happy birthday to Hannah Klein, who's turning 17 today on November 15th. It is a historic day, very much so, in the world of sports and in baseball in particular, because Barry Bonds, the all-time home run leader, formerly of the San Francisco Giants, was indicted today for obstructing justice and for lying to a federal grand jury for perjury, the same thing that they got Scooter Libby for, the former assistant chief of staff for Vice President Dick Cheney. And so now they're going to try to get Barry Bonds after a four-year investigation. And wouldn't you know that coincidence would have it, luck would have it, that our guest tonight is the play-by-play man for the Tampa Bay Rays Major League Baseball team, a good friend of ours. And so we'll have a chance to talk to Mr. Dwayne Statz about his take on all of that and about the budding baseball, hopefully improving situation here in the Tampa Bay region. And I believe he's online with us right now. Dwayne, welcome online. How are you tonight? Well, we had Dwayne. And apparently...
Yep. Hello.
There he is.
Hey.
How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well, and you?
I am doing wonderfully. Thank you for caring enough to ask.
And I mean that too. I'm very serious about that.
I know you're a very serious guy, and because Dwayne, a longtime correspondent for the Glenn Klein Online radio broadcast over the years, and it's great to have you back on, Dwayne. You've been in off season already. You've been on a little bit of vacation, or what you been doing?
We have. We took a little cruise, and we've spent a little time over in Houston, and back here. We came back for the Rays launch, and then did a couple of community activities here and on behalf of the Rays. And it's been a busy off season already.
Yeah.
Only 89 days left until pitchers and catchers report, by the way.
Looking forward to that. And Dwayne has been the only play-by-play television man that the Tampa Bay Rays have ever had. Of course, also had time with the Houston Astros and the Chicago Cubs, the New York Yankees, and been down here with Joe McGrain in the Tampa Bay area since the team's inception. And Dwayne knows very well that I have been on my high horse since day one of the announcement that Tampa Bay was going to finally get a Major League Baseball team. And I thought, Dwayne, as you well know, that one of the most hideous marketing moves ever was to name the team the Devil Rays, right smack dab in the middle of the Bible Belt, just from a marketing standpoint. and you know, and you will verify to the beautiful humans, will you not, that I tried my best meeting with guys like Rick Vaughn and Orestes Destrade and even Mike Beck I got to. We talked about it many times. And finally, 10 years later, they finally dropped the devil from the name.
You were way out in front of that one, and as usual, you were a man ahead of his time. And once again, I think that proves the case. There's no question. You were one of the leading proponents of doing what they actually did last week and make it official and make this team the Rays only. And it should be duly noted, and you should get full credit for that.
And I should get some consulting fee, I think, too.
Well, I would think, you know, and this time of greed, and I'll take everything on the table, you should have your share.
Well, it was my idea, damn it, and I want full credit for it. No, what they did, of course, when they announced that the name of the team would be the Devil Rays, there was an immediate uproar because, of course, they did not take the sensitivity into a large percentage of the Tampa Bay population who do not like the devil. It's not like being in New Jersey down here in Florida. You know what I'm saying?
And sure, or San Francisco on different accounts. But
Exactly. That's exactly right. You don't see a lot of gay rights parades down a street in Dale Mabry here, you know? So they were not sensitive to that at all. And they had a vote, ladies and gentlemen, was it going to be the Devil Rays or the Manta Rays? And it was about 50-50 of the vote, if you'll remember, Dwayne. And they thought, oh, well, we already announced the Devil, so we're going to go with that. Instead of thinking, half the people already don't like our name. So I feel vindicated on this particular Thursday night, and I'm so glad that all the beautiful humans get to share my vindication. But
I think, you should enjoy the moment because you were once again right on point. And I mentioned San Francisco only in that years ago, you mentioned my Astros connection when Bob Knepper, I think you remember the left-hander, but
sure.
Bob was not a fan of San Francisco and once referred to it as the Devil City and then was immediately traded out there and had to pitch for the Giants. So, you know, he had a little of that in his background. And then it should be duly noted that we have exorcised the Devil from the Rays nickname, and I think we're all better off for it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to the upcoming season for the Tampa Bay Rays, and we're going to talk about that for a moment. But since you mentioned San Francisco, it was very fortuitous that you were scheduled to be on the webcast tonight because, of course, this evening it was announced that Barry Bonds was indicted by a federal grand jury for obstruction of justice and lying to a federal grand jury for perjury, saying that they didn't believe him when he said that he didn't take steroids and didn't, or that he didn't know that he was taking steroids.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so what's your take on all this?
Well, you know, there are a couple of ways to pursue that, and one is that you let the system work its way through the machinations that it will have. And I think you have to do that. That's one way, and so we will find out at the end of the day and when the legal process runs its course what this is. The other way to take this, and I believe that it's what you alluded to, obviously the prosecutor didn't believe his statement that he didn't know what he was doing, and I really think that in the court of public opinion, most people will form that same opinion, and it's depending on which way you look at it, fortunate or unfortunate. But I think the court of public opinion believes that it's a little far-fetched to think that he didn't know what he was doing, and so I don't think anybody's surprised by what has happened. The downside to that is baseball and. You know, here you have the all-time home run leader now being indicted, and you have the all-time hits leader denied entry into the Hall of Fame because of his gambling habits. And so those things are never good for baseball, but, you know, a lot of people say, and people who want to be reflective about the game and how it parallels where we're going or where we've been in society, there's a great tie-in, I think, with baseball and our society. Because it is such an intricate part woven into our society. So maybe it's a reflection of the times, and it's certainly not a good thing for baseball. Something else. It seems that baseball every couple decades has to overcome itself, and the people who run it and the people who participate in it. And I think this is just a prime example of that. You know, you go back in history to the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century, gambling was so prevalent, and finally it caught up with it in the 1919 World Series. It had to overcome that, and Babe Ruth saved that, and it survived the Depression, and it survived all kinds of other things. People said that it would never survive free agency. It's managed to do that. And then the latest gambling and drug scandals, you know, the 80s had their share of drug scandals out of Pittsburgh. And then and now this, and the steroid problem that it has attempted to overcome, and now this. So despite all of that, baseball now survives. And a guy who could be considered perhaps my mentor, Gene Elston, who, as you know, a couple of years ago was elected to the Hall of Fame, got the Ford Frick Award, and he said that. He said, baseball is such a great game, and it's so resilient that it overcomes those who own and run it, and history has shown that it will do that, and it'll do that with bonds, but it is disappointing that here you have the all-time home run king in this situation.
We're talking with Dwayne Statz, the play-by-play man for the Tampa Bay Rays. We're talking about the whole Barry Bonds thing that just came down a few hours ago. You know, baseball is such a wonderful game, and those that love baseball understand exactly what I'm talking about. But baseball, I think, has a unique place in American history, Dwayne, because it has reflected so much the ebbs and flows of our society. Obviously, Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in the 1940s, and everything that has happened, even with the tremendous influx of Hispanic players, again reflecting what's happening in our society. And I think that society and baseball as a whole also bears some responsibility to what has happened now with the all-time home run champion, which may be the most coveted record in all of sports, now being tainted with the steroid scandal.
Well, it does, and it's at least a double-headed monster because the commissioner no longer, for years, and no longer has been the autocratic ruler of the game the way Judge Landis was following the 1919 gambling and Black Sox scandal. Since the Major League Baseball Players Association has become perhaps the strongest union known to man, certainly the strongest union today. Since then, baseball, the hierarchy of baseball and the Major League Baseball office has had to deal with some very difficult and sometimes very, they've been very overmatched in their labor negotiations. And these issues then become not only moral issues and common sense issues, they become legal and labor issues. And that has really, I think, prevented baseball from taking the decisive steps that they would need to, and the kind that that were made by Judge Landis as commissioner back in 1919. Those kind of moves by anyone in our society today would be impossible. Judge Landis could not exist today under the current, not only under current baseball structure, but I think in the structure of our society, it's changed. And so in that way, it reflects society, and in that way, Major League Baseball is to blame for this, but the Players Association is also to blame in not policing itself better, and the two, the adversarial relationship that has existed between the two prevented the kind of consensus that was needed to prevent a tragic occurrence such as we see here, and you're right, the tainting of the all-time home run record. And that's where we are.
That is where we are. And, you know, it's really a shame that when after Jose Canseco came out with his book and Congress decided to have the hearings, and you had Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa and Rafael Palmeiro go before Congress and basically lie, or at least not be willing to discuss it in the case of Mark McGuire, and all of a sudden Sammy Sosa didn't understand English anymore. It's a shame that somebody didn't stand up and say, the American public is an amazingly forgiving public when people are straight up with the public. And we see here Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa literally were credited with saving the game again coming out of the strike year when the World Series was canceled. And if McGuire especially would have stood up and said, listen, this is what was going on at the time, I'm not proud of it, this is what I did, I think that he would be in the Hall of Fame right now. And this whole thing may have turned into a whole different situation instead of trying to sweep it under the carpet. And of course, people like that are in the public eye, like Barry Bonds or like a Mark McGuire or Sammy Sosa, are impacted by the way other people that find themselves in a scandalous situation. I think to the way that Bill Clinton handled his situation, instead of coming out and admitting it and facing the music, he skirted the issue. Interesting use of words right there. But and then it's very possible that he might end up back in the White House with his wife as president now. And so this was the lesson that was learned. If you deny, you deny, you deny, and then you just deal with it when you have to deal with it, somehow it works out. But it has not worked out well for Mark McGuire.
Well, it hasn't. I mean, he's paid the price in terms of Hall of Fame and a lot of areas of baseball. He's almost persona non grata because of that. And it is disappointing. I mean, when you were describing the political misadventures of Bill Clinton and all that, it almost makes baseball look pretty good, if that could be the case. The sad part about that is it shows us not only in baseball, but in our political arenas, where parents point to a president or some public servant, politician, however you'd prefer to characterize that, to point to them as role models, and when you see the fact that they're willing to compromise their principle and their integrity, that's a problem. And frankly, that's the challenge that society has always had going forward. I think in the evolution of societal development, that has been the primary fight. And I think I don't think it would be stretching the point all this much to say that it gets back to that great either philosophical or spiritual battle between good and evil and right and wrong. And so we see that fought on our television sets and on news reports and sports reports and all of our major sports, in this case baseball, and in our political arena, and the example, the presidential example that you just mentioned, is another perfect case. It is, I guess, at the end of the day, not to sound overly philosophical, but it is the plight of man, and that's what we do. We fight that battle every day.
Well, as I like to say, you can never go wrong doing right. And the lesson that is the short-term lesson that seems to be have learned from at least the Clinton example is that you can almost get away with lying to the whole country if you have enough talent. And that seems to be what has happened with Barry Bonds. I'm sure the Giants are thanking their lucky stars right now that they did not re-sign them. And, of course, no team has signed him now, and I would venture to guess that he's going to have a very difficult time being signed as a free agent now with an indictment hanging over his head.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the Giants felt that there was an obligation to complete the home run chase the way they did, and they did that and then called it a day. And this latest development will make it very difficult for him to play with anyone. I'm not sure there's any club owner who would sign him, and I would have to believe that collectively other club owners, and while they may not overtly engage in this, but they would all. I couldn't imagine Major League Baseball would encourage any club to sign him, and it just wouldn't make any sense to me if you've got that indictment hanging over your head. And he's a guy who is not what you would want to represent. He is what he is right now, and they're stuck with that, but he is not what you would want to represent to your community as someone who you would like to hold up as an idol or an ideal for your children.
We're talking with Dwayne Statz, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, and of course, Dwayne has done a lot of other sports broadcasting. For my money, truly one of the outstanding play-by-play men in the country. And Dwayne, you were in Major League Baseball during this entire era. Kind of everybody had a wink and a nod towards what was going on. We had, of course, Jose Canseco here with the Devil Rays during all of this. What was going on behind the scenes? What were people saying at the time? What was the general tenor and opinion of what was happening as it was happening right in front of us? We were seeing these guys just balloon in front of our eyes.
Well, I think there were a number of reactions from a number of different areas of the game. I never saw any one of those individuals challenged about that in any way. I think management felt helpless in the face of the labor situation, of potential legal situations, and from a practical sense, I think there's many people, general managers and coaches, who just felt helpless to do anything about that or to actually address it. And so what they reverted to was doing what a coach would normally do, and that is take his club and work on the fundamentals of the game and the things that you would want a coach to do. But they were, and in many cases, not equipped to deal with any steroid situation.
But was everybody aware of what was going on, though? Was there a general sense of what was actually happening while it was happening?
I think I would go this far to say that suspicion of that was pretty widespread. And to say that people knew that this was going on, you know, it's one thing to actually know something, and it's another thing to guess that it may be happening or take an educated guess or speculate on it or have some feeling that this may be going on. And I think there was a lot of that. I think there was a lot of suspicion. And I think even among players, I think there was a division among players, because here's the thing that we have to remember. While this was going on, and I don't know the percentage of players during that time that would be illegally or unfairly gaining an advantage by using this. And in some cases, some of these things may have been legal and some may have been illegal.
A lot of it was legal. A lot of these guys did it. They were getting prescriptions from doctors.
Exactly. And what we do know is that they gained an unfair advantage.
What percentage of players do you think were not using some form of steroid during the steroid era?
Well, I really believe that it was I believe that the majority of players were not using that. I think there were, you've got a 25-man roster, so how many guys on that roster were using that? And I'd almost pick a, if you would, you say 5 men out of that roster used. 4 to 5, that's going to put you, you know, somewhere in the 15 to 25% of players who are using that. And I'd think that you'd probably be safe in terms of how many use that. Let's say the 25% did. You've got 75% of the players then who are performing and competing against people who are getting an unnatural and unfair advantage beyond hard work and dedication and paying attention. So, and I do believe that if you talk to those players, active today and those who have since retired, they are the ones who feel shortchanged by all that and would be as upset in a one-on-one conversation as anyone. That being true, collectively, they didn't seem to be that upset because no one stood up in the player association meetings. If 75% of those players were not using it, wouldn't you think that at some point somebody would stand up and say, look, this guy's costing me money, he's costing me wins, he's costing me an opportunity to be as good as I can be, as honestly as I can be, a professional, and in the sake of unity, and that's why, again, referencing how strong the union is, in deference to unity, I think no one stood up and did that, and I really believe that most of the players were not using it during that time, were those who did and who gained the advantage unfairly because of that.
And if you talk to players that maybe still are in the game or that certainly were playing during that era who are upset, and have they voiced that to you privately?
I've talked with players individually in the wake of all this who are disgusted by it, number one, and also feel as if they feel they did the right thing by not using it, but they also feel that they were put at a disadvantage and it cost them a measure of success in their careers because they were dealing with people who did what they did and gained an advantage the way they did. And individually, I think you can talk to players all day long who feel like that, but no one collectively in the union, and at the end of the day, they were all willing to follow their leader, the leadership of the union, and I think that's what they did, and baseball and individual players have made tremendous gains under the Players Association dating back to the days of Marvin Miller. The only reason they did is that they stood united. Had they been divided, and we've seen athletic unions, we've seen it in the NFL, what happened to their union because they were divided.
Right.
And so it's a difficult decision to make. At the end of the day, the only reason that union has been successful is because it has been united, and baseball's union has remained that way. And even through this, even through individuals who felt like they were at a disadvantage, I think they felt that, at least in this sense, in one sense, I don't know how we quantify what's the best, what's the greater good of that, but they felt that unity, I guess, was more important than making an issue of really finding out what was going on in this steroid situation. Mm-hmm. The other side of this is it's so difficult to police, and in many cases it was so difficult to detect. Number one,
well, they weren't testing for it. At the
exactly,
time.
Exactly. But then that's the point. They weren't testing for it, and if they did, it's so difficult, number one, to set up a testing mechanism, and if they did set up a testing mechanism, it's so difficult then to detect some of that for any number of reasons. And in some cases, it involves things that would not necessarily be foreign to the human body. In other cases, they're masking agents.
Right.
So it became a situation that, you know, it's Larry Durker, when he was managing the Astros and later wrote a book, once said managing a major league club was trying to herd a bunch of house cats. Well, I think that metaphor is certainly true about this whole steroid case too. How do you chase that and grab them without it slipping away from you? And it seems that every time you did that, for the reasons we just mentioned, that it made it almost impossible to actually police this situation, and not only then from the practical side, but from the legal side and from the labor side, it made it difficult. And so at the end of the day, we are where we are. Barry Bonds is under indictment, if not directly for steroid use. This all stems from that. Perjury and obstruction of justice, and at the bottom line is steroid use there. And the failure to be able to do all of that leads us to this point. It's bad enough that the all-time home run leader is doing that, I think it had the potential to be even worse than this in terms of numbers. I don't know how you can get worse individually than this, where the home run leader is of all time is in the middle of that. But I, as bad as it is, I think it could have been worse, because you know, you open the top of that box and you never know what's coming out, and to put the lid on it, it was impossible for them to do that.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Dwayne Statz, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, and we want to talk about the Rays' future in our remaining few moments with Dwayne. And at the end of the day, as far as the steroid thing, and unfortunately, I don't know that it's going to come from our current leadership in Major League Baseball today, but baseball is going to have some statement about this entire era to bring any kind of closure and sense to it all. Because it's going to involve the Hall of Fame voting. It already has for Mark McGwire, guys like Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa, who normally have made the Hall of Fame, clearly are in jeopardy. Even Barry Bonds is in jeopardy now of not being in the Hall of Fame. And I don't know if Bud Selig has the kind of stones to draw this to some sort of conclusion and to be able to move on. And I guess, you know, we'll just have to see how Major League Baseball handles it from here on out. It has not been an impressive record to date. But at the beginning of the show, Dwayne, you mentioned all the money that has impacted baseball. Right now, Alex Rodriguez appears to be on the verge of re-signing amazingly with the Yankees for well over $20 million. You're talking about a 10-year, $275 million contract. And bringing that home to the Rays, I mean, how does a team that had a payroll this year that did not even equal one of Alex Rodriguez's year, how do they compete in a division with the world champion Boston Red Sox, with the Yankees, who are willing to spend that kind of money? They would have to leapfrog at least both those teams to even be considered for a wild card spot. And I hear everybody, of course, bitching and moaning on local media about the Devil Rays payroll this year, but the Rays were not a $20 million team. I mean, that was a team that what was the payroll this year? About $23 million for the Rays.
Yeah, that's a fair estimation.
Yeah, but on the open market, that's about a $70 million team with the talent that is playing in St. Petersburg right now. So that, right. They got a lot of talent, obviously, for what they were getting. But even with that, even if they doubled or tripled the payroll, how is that team ever going to be able to compete in the Eastern Division of the American League?
Well, I think that those are legitimate questions. On one side of the coin, people would point to the Colorado Rockies and what they did this year, and that's well and good and all a possibility, and I think you have to feel that's possible. The problem is, and you're right, I think, about the actual payroll and the value of the performance they got, because if you grade out the performances of this club individually, you're absolutely right. You could extrapolate probably a $70 million payroll in terms of performances. Well, businessmen will tell you that's good business. That's how you get ahead, and that's one way you do. But the other way is the other obstacles are the two you mentioned primarily, the Yankees and the Red Sox, in this division. Not impossible. One of the ways that you do that is grow people in your own system. You tie those kids up beyond their free agent years, as they're attempting to do. The other thing that they do is increase revenue. And that's why what they've attempted to do with this club from a marketing end is market it regionally. Now, that got a lot of lip service from the beginning of this franchise, but there wasn't a lot of that done. That's why they moved into Orlando to play that series with the Texas Rangers over there.
Right.
Probably going to see another series played over there this year. That's why last year, for the first time, we had about half of our games on television in the Orlando area. They look to expand a radio and television presence there, as well as a physical presence there. And the key to that is, if you combine the Tampa Bay markets and the Orlando markets, it becomes the fourth largest market in the country
mm-hmm.
from a broadcast perspective. That's what their goal is. Their goal is not to move to Orlando. Their goal is to reach out and encompass Orlando as part of the marketing region, the footprint, as they call it, of this ball club from a marketing end. They're going to have to do that, frankly. They can stay alive, and they can hope that they can compete. The revenue sharing has helped them to a point, and I really think that from and this is something that not only this market but every market realistically will have to deal with. They can compete. They can put clubs together and have competing clubs. I believe that it's possible to have a contending club for a number of years. Whether that run's going to be 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then you're going to have a retooling. The Yankees and Red Sox can go out and buy any part of the machine they need, but almost every other club is going to have to shoot for that period, that window of opportunity for 3 or 4 years, where they can actually be competitive and shoot for a wild card, or shoot for actually winning a division outright. And I think that's what this club's trying to do. Would it be easier? Would the odds be greater that this team could do it if they were in the National League Central? There's no question. And I've been a big proponent that this team should be in the National League from year one, and I'd love to see this team go to the National League and the National League Central, because with the club they had last year, they could have been a competitive force in the National League Central division.
Does baseball care about something like that?
Well, I think it does, to the extent that, and people will tell you that baseball really doesn't care anything about any of the other markets except New York and Boston, because those are the big money markets and those are the big rating markets, and people will put forth that argument. Whether that's true or not, we can debate that all night long, but. I think that baseball cares about maybe moving a team like this one to the Central if ownership pushes the idea enough, and there would be, there would also be a switch. It would have to cost this team some money. They would probably have to take a team from, say, the National League Central, entice them with a significant lump sum payment to get them out of that division and let this team go in. That's one scenario that could allow that to happen. Not impossible. Stranger things have happened. I'm not privy to any of that may or would. I wouldn't even call it probable. I'd call it possible. And if they did that, this franchise, the value of this franchise, would be boosted tremendously. Until that time, they're going to have to deal with facing the Red Sox and the Yankees almost a quarter of their schedule. And here's the deal. Let's just look at the current Yankees right now. They were not invincible. They've been in a point of flux. They thought Alex Rodriguez was not going to go back. He said some things, I think, that created a division there. I'm not so sure that Derek Jeter, I don't think he'll say this publicly, but I think there are guys on that team who would just as soon not see Alex Rodriguez go back and be a Yankee. Mariano Rivera, they have a big offer on the table for him. But you know what? He's finally starting to show that one of the greatest closers of all time is human.
Right.
He's not automatic. Jorge Posada, a great guy, and maybe the most productive catcher in baseball of these last few years, and he comes to play every day, he plays hard. There's been a lot of wear and tear on him as a result of that. So, those are three key elements to this team that may not be as good as they were last year when they started to show some signs of faltering because of age. So a team like the Yankees, despite all the money that they've spent right now under their current setup, are certainly not invincible. Not impossible that the makeup of that team could fall to finish third or fourth in a division, despite all their money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think the Red Sox are probably in a better position because of some young talent they have and some young arms and young pitching. But, here's another side of the Red Sox. It only takes, let's say, Papelbon, who has been just unbelievable at the end, and went back to that role and not starting because of some physical concerns. Well, maybe he's easy to replace and maybe he's not. They tried to get Eric Gagne to come in there and pitch and set up for him. He did not pitch well, and they invested a deal in him and money and all of that. Well, if he turns out to be their closer because of a potential injury to Papelbon, then all of a sudden the end of the game for the Red Sox is not as automatic as it was, and so they're open for discussion. Now, if you have a team of young players like this one and they can plug some holes, they have to get the Rays have to get themselves into a position where their defense will protect their pitching. They're looking for a shortstop with range. They desperately need a shortstop with range to protect their pitching. If they can add that, even a young shortstop, and he doesn't have to hit 300. He can hit 250 and really help a club, because they project to have Longoria at third, Iwamura at second, and Pena at first. If they have a shortstop with above average range, that's a pretty good infield. And they have some great physical ability that should get better defensively in the outfield over the next year or two.
Yeah, it could be argued that that's one of the best young outfields in baseball.
Exactly. And the more B.J. Upton plays center and acclimates himself to center field, the better he's going to be. So if they can do that and add a couple of veteran pitchers, now all of a sudden, you know, they say you have to get to 500, and once you get to 500, anything can happen. Well, that's where I kind of see this club right now. And if this club can attain respectability, put itself in a position to be a break-even club in a very tough division, and age catches up with the Yankees, dissension catches up with the Yankees, then I think this club, it's not impossible to think that this club could actually reach the postseason, even competing in the American League East. It'd be a lot easier elsewhere and really tough here, but certainly not an impossible dream.
The new ownership group has been here for a few years now, and Stuart Sturberg has been successful in every endeavor that he set out to do. And I know they have a business plan. They have a model that they're going after. And you talked about their desire to expand the market, the footprint. Taking away the devil from their name was a huge step forward, because there is a large percentage of the population in the region where we live that just won't have their kids wearing stuff that says devil on it. They just won't do it. Well, now that's gone. And so the fan-friendly atmosphere that has clearly been starting to permeate Tropicana Field, if it can start to be reflected on the field, you're right. There may be a light at the end of this tunnel. Have you been, and I know you're talking about your employer right now, but this is the second ownership group that's been with this franchise. Do you have reason for optimism about the money they're willing to spend and the moves that they're willing to make this team get closer to that break-even point on the field?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I think there's no, in my mind, there's no question that they have the money. I think they're going to be very prudent about that. And I think to this point, when they came in here, they had a lot of work to do in terms of developing the underpinnings of this organization. I think they've attempted to do that. They continue to be very smart about a lot of those moves that they've made. They try to make them so that they will help sustain a positive situation with this club in a lot of areas. And I think you know, you've got to build a foundation before you can build the first and second stories of a house. And I think they found themselves coming in where this organization needed a lot of foundation work. And at the same time, while you're building that house, you want to make sure that what you're putting in there would be quality components. And I think, by and large, that's what they've attempted to do and what they want to do. They don't want to go out and overspend for either inferior products, and if they get a superior product, you know, they don't really want to overspend for that. I think they will at the time spend fair market value for that, but I don't think you'll see this team going out and trying to sign a starting pitcher just because he happened to be in the free agent market and they needed a pitcher and they're going to overpay for him. I think they're going to be very careful about that. And I think that's good business. So the answer to that is yes. I've seen him make tremendous strides in foundational matters with his team, trying to develop talent in Venezuela and the Dominican. We're going to see more and more of that. Jerry Hunsicker came over here from Houston and almost single-handedly developed and brought with him people who had established the Venezuelan Academy with Houston, with the Astros, who developed people like Bobby Abreu, Freddie Garcia, Carlos Guillen. There are a number of outstanding players that came through their Venezuelan development plan that the Rays have now implemented with some of the same people and the same contacts. And as you know, in that part of the world, history and personal interaction and and contacts are so important. Well, the Rays have those now in Venezuela. They have a greater presence in the Dominican. They've done that. So those are the kind of things that don't get a lot of ink, but down the road, will pay tremendous dividends for this club. And so I think at the right time, you know, they're projecting, would Stu Sternberg love to see this club have a winning record next year? There's no question. I think some of the people in the front office look at next year and as making a significant step. Interesting in that I think Sternberg actually has targeted 09 for a year where this club could really step up and make a significant move in terms of wins and losses. The manager, Joe Maddon, who's usually the manager's neck is on the chopping block first and as much as anybody, Maddon has really made some statements about this team taking significant steps next year in win totals. And so it'll be interesting to see what this club does. And I think Joe would be absolutely right if this team can make a move to get a young shortstop with exceptional range who can help and add a couple veteran pitchers, and they don't have to be frontline guys. They've got a couple young pitchers in Kazmir and Shields who are developing into frontline people. If they can get one or two other pitchers on this staff, I think it could be a big step and a big year for this club next year in terms of positioning themselves for success and approaching that break-even point.
Well, even the fact that they're talking about the potential of a new ballpark shows that they are serious. And then you pick up a guy like Iwamura from Japan that any major league team would have liked to have had last year. And I think there is reason for optimism coming out of the baseball franchise in St. Petersburg.
I do, and I think, you know, they're obviously going forward. And I don't know much about the intricacies of the new ballpark, but they did formulate a plan, and they had it leak out a month or so earlier, I think, than they wanted. But just the fact that they're that serious and have some concrete plans about that and a game plan on that, I think all of those are encouraging signs.
Well, for a guy that loves baseball and loves to come and watch it live and on television, because wherever I go, I got the Major League package. So you and McGrain are coming with me, whether I'm in Wisconsin or down here or wherever. And even watching the Rays, it's a pleasure to listen to you guys. If the Rays had the kind of quality on the field that they do in the broadcast booth, we'd be talking about playoffs every year. So thanks for making it pleasurable to listen and watch it anyway, Dwayne. Much appreciated.
Well, you're very kind. I appreciate that. Bless your heart for saying those things. And for us, it's really a labor of love. And at the end of the day, it keeps us off the streets and out of trouble and to a point gainfully employed. And you can't ask for much more than that.
You know, you're keeping McGrain off the streets and out of trouble. That's a good job right there.
That's great.
Our guest has been Dwayne Stass, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. Nice to say the Tampa Bay Rays. And, yeah, what did you say, 85 days till pitchers and catchers report?
Yeah, we've got, 89 starting
89.
Today, so
okay.
We're closing in on it being just 88.
Okay,
so,
well, all right, man, thanks so much for your time. Always a pleasure.
Same here. Thank you very much. Always look forward to getting together with you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. That's Dwayne Statz, ladies and gentlemen of the Tampa Bay Rays. We want to thank Patrick Jones for engineering producing this webcast. This is Glenn Klein Online. Until next time, shalom, everybody.